From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. From national security to global corruption, you're with Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting in the shadow of the Washington, D.C., where today there will be massive protests from the far left and the anti-Israel forces of the Islamic extremists, who are protesting the fact that they're not allowed to kill all the Jews and commit genocide. That's what they're protesting for. The right to kill all Jews, and to despite the fact that Israel has provided Gaza with electricity and water for its entire existence, they have risen up and decided to slaughter and attempt to carry out the genocide that they've been attempting to carry out for decades. It's not a secret. Hamas, it's in their charter. From the river to the sea means to either drive all Jews in the sea into the Mediterranean Sea or kill them all. It's that simple. I've been investigating Hamas for decades. I've worked undercover inside Hamas. I know them. That's their objective, to kill all Jews. They are the genocidal maniacs, period. There is no argument to this. Now, on to their helpers. This week, Kamala Harris, we're going to be speaking with a media expert here shortly named Steve Cohen, coming up in the second segment. But last week, you might recall, we discussed Obama's remarks following the assassination, the killing of abortionist George Tiller, who was shot. And Obama's reaction was, "I'm shocked and outraged," he said. This is back in 2009. But when 12 unarmed soldiers were murdered by Nidal Hassan, a Muslim extremist at Fort Hood, Obama's reaction was, "I would caution against jumping to any conclusions about the motives of the gunmen." That's what he said, because, of course, soldiers are expendable in the Obama world. But this week just got worse. And with Kamala Harris ushering in a ridiculous, in fact, Obama, it seems like it's Democrats' first reaction whenever Muslims go on a barbaric, murderous rampage, to call them the victims. Not a joke. That's what Democrats do. In fact, just this week, after the October 7th barbaric, horrific attack, where Hamas and other Palestinians from Gaza invaded Israel and slaughtered innocent women and children, gunned them down in cold blood, more than 1,000 of them, took hostages, on and on. We don't need to recap that horrible event. But this week, Kamala Harris announced that she is initiating a new proposal. And she said, announced this week, "For years, Muslims in America and those perceived to be Muslim have endured a disproportionate number of hate-fueled attacks as a result of the Hamas terrorist attack in Israel and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza." By the way, the humanitarian crisis of their own making. They created the humanitarian crisis. They've taken the billions of dollars that's been funneled to Gaza and decided to make weapons with it instead of providing water and electricity for the people who live in Gaza. They use that money to make weapons for which they will kill and try to carry out their objective, which is to commit mass genocide on the Jewish population of Israel. Back to Harris's statement, "We have seen an uptick in anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, anti-Semitic, and Islamophobic incidents across the country." Well, the academic Douglas Murray has had something to say. In fact, he wrote for the New York Post this week. This is a truncated version of what he said. Of course, if there is any such thing as, quote, Islamophobia, unquote, it has a very straightforward explanation. Islamophobia is the expression of distaste many people feel about the murderous behavior of radical Muslims. And while most Muslims in the West don't engage in such acts, too many are willing to condone them or fail to condemn them. A lot of people notice that and don't like it. But this stupid moral inversion, and that's a great term for this, moral inversion is all that this administration seems to be capable of, Murray says. Murray writes in the Post. Vice President Harris' statement echoed White House press spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre's declaration that, quote, for too long, Muslims in America and those perceived to be Muslim, such as Arabs and Sikhs, have endured a disproportionate number of hate-fueled attacks and other discriminatory incidents, unquote. We covered Karine Jean-Pierre's comments on the last broadcast. Back to Murray. What people like Jean-Pierre may not realize is that the false narrative they pump out gives cover to people who should have none. For instance, Representative Rashida Tlaib, Democrat of Michigan, is very keen to denounce her critics as deeply Islamophobic, whereas most people who dislike her because she is a Palestinian extremist, one who finds it morally complex to condemn the deliberate murder and an abduction of Jewish children. But even the president is at it. In a speech on October 20, he said, "I know many of you in the Muslim American community or the Arab American community, the Palestinian American community, and so many others are outraged and hurting, saying to yourselves, here we go again with Islamophobia and distrust we saw after 9/11, unquote. That was Biden. In fact, considering the scale of the 9/11 attacks, it is a testament to the decency of the American people that there were so few attacks on or criticisms of Muslims in the U.S. Had the followers of any other religion committed those acts, I would expect any backlash to have been far worse. But contrary to the false narrative, there has been no spike in anti-Muslim hate. No spike. This has been consistent throughout. There's an occasional one-off attack on a Muslim that happens, and that's a tragedy. But let's stop this Islamophobia crap, which is just outrageous. Those are my words, not Murray's. And especially not since October 7. Yet liars are going to lie. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE as it's known here, is an organization that has been linked to numerous terrorist groups, but it still claims to be the main Muslim spokesgroup in the U.S., which is a problem right there. Its research and advocacy director, Corey Saylor, recently said, many companies have previously pledged their commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace, yet the disregard for the Palestinian and Muslim employees affected by this current conflict has indicated otherwise, unquote. And that, of course, is simply not true. There has been no disregard for Palestinian and Muslim employees in the U.S. It is a fiction created by CARE to turn themselves into the victims. But here's the thing. Muslims aren't the victims here. The Jews of Israel were. And the Jews of the U.S. now are, as part of that blowback. So return to where I started, says Murray. Imagine you are a Jew, and then imagine how it must feel to see your persecutors and tormentors from Gaza to Brooklyn being turned into the victims. Yeah, imagine that. That was Douglas Murray writing on the New York Post about the feckless Kamala Harris new initiative to stop Islamophobia. Isn't this consistent, though, with the Democrat Party? They created this bugaboo of MAGA people who are the real threat to the Republic. Trump supporters are the real threat to the United States and to the peace in the country. That is the Democrat narrative. It is so outrageous and hideous that it's transparent on its face. I don't consider myself in that group of Trump supporters. I'm not. But to look around and have the Democrat Party create, manufacture outrage against Trump supporters on the basis that they're dangerous and a threat to democracy is ridiculous. They throw the word fascist around and they don't even know the meaning of it. They don't know what the word fascist means. The simplest definition would demonstrate that Democrats are the real fascists here. And one of the primary pieces of evidence of that is they're the ones who want to consolidate power in Washington, D.C. Republicans, Trump included, and Trump supporters want to deregulate the federal government, the opposite of fascism. Democrats want more regulation, more control in Washington. Fascism, that's the very definition of the word. Centralized power, control, control over corporations. That is fascism. That's what Democrats stand for. But in the context of what many have said and noticed for a long time, Democrats frequently, either knowingly or unknowingly, accuse their opposition of doing what they, in fact, are doing. It's bizarre. It's strange. Weird. But what can we do other than report it and show it? Coming up here in just a moment, we're going to talk about the New York Times coverage of the hospital bombing in Gaza. And hold on to your seat, because you're going to be shocked at the position the New York Times has carved out for itself, as it was one of the first to falsely report that bombing of the hospital in Gaza 2 weeks ago was, in fact, an Israeli bombing, according to the New York Times. They reported it right just like that from the beginning without any criticism or scrutiny of the matter. We're going to talk about that plus more with our expert witness here. His name is Steve Cohen, and he's been in the news business for 50 years, so you won't want to miss that. We'll take a short time out now, a little bit early, and we'll come back with Mr. Cohen right after these messages. I'm Scott Wheeler.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
MasterCard and the Gates Foundation have joined forces to launch, quote, community pass. All citizens of the world would be required to carry one if they wish to participate in society. In Africa, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Mauritania, 2.5 million people are said to be on board. Ghana and Ethiopia might easily be next, as the global payments per HEMA tests the levels of farmers' interest, brackets, desperation. Because the problem is, once the multilateral agencies get a hold of a tool like this, that they will tend to then say, well, if you want your debt facility renewed, we'll need to line up for the global digital identity card. There's no limit to the ambition for control.
Ross Cameron on TNT Radio.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. They've launched a new service called Wake Up Your Neighbours, where you can get copies delivered to the streets right around you if you don't want to do it yourself. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. Thelightpaper.co.uk.
The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from the Washington, D.C. area. Now, let me bring in our expert witness. Steve Cohen has 50 years as news chief, worked for CBS affiliates. He's vice president, general manager of more than one network. He's works in crisis and media now, strategic message design group. And we're going to first, let me go before we bring Mr. Cohen in, let me introduce the first subject on this matter, because Mr. Cohen is an expert on the media. The New York Times on Friday the 3rd had this. As I was reading it, I became more incredulous as I went through. The Times said, last month, a few days after the explosion at the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City, I walked you through, this is David Lionheart, a columnist for the New York Times, writing this. Actually, he's a journalist. He's more of an opinion guy, though he pretends not to be. Walked you through the debate over who was responsible. At that time, there wasn't much evidence that outsiders could assess on their own. Well, that's not even true. But the dispute resolved around competing claims from Israel and Hamas, as though the two are equal. One is a legitimate state power and the other is a terrorist organization. And we're supposed to pretend like Hamas is just as honest as Israel is, of course. But more evidence has since emerged. In today's newsletter, I'll explain, says Lionheart, the hospital explosion is important in its own right. It was the biggest news story in the world for days and sparked protests across the Middle East. The explosion also has a larger significance. It offers clues about how to judge the claims about civilian casualties that are central to Hamas's war message. Okay, what it actually does is offer clues about how pathetic the New York Times is at reporting such things. It has been a miserable failure. It's been on the side of terrorists. It was on the side of communists, and it was on the side of Nazis. So there's nothing inconsistent about the New York Times over the past 106 years. It was pro-communist, pro-Nazi, and now pro-terrorists. So whoever is against America, the Times is with. They become their advocate, even if it means arguing ridiculous, asinine claims like the hospital was bombed by Israel. The New York Times goes on to say the most complicated part of the evidence involves various cameras that captured the sky above Gaza on the night of October 17th. The Associated Press, CNN, and the Wall Street Journal each analyzed the footage and concluded that a malfunctioning rocket from Gaza, presumably from Palestinian fighters, caused the explosion. Israeli and U.S. intelligence officials have made the same argument. Well, of course, because it's the only thing that makes sense when you look at the video. But the New York Times examined the visual investigations team, exposed flaws in the footage analysis, because always there's flaws in combat video, right? That can be exploited by terrorists and their mouthpiece in the New York Times, for example. They claim that Times reporters used additional cameras to conclude that the projectile actually came from Israel and did not land near the hospital, which means it couldn't have caused the explosion. At least two independent analysts, as well as the Washington Post, agree. It also explains that a separate video does show a barrage of rockets from Gaza headed towards the hospital just before the explosion. Well, what a coincidence. One of them could have been a stray rocket launched by a Palestinian armed group. The Post wrote, the Times analysis notes that Palestinian and Israeli forces were each firing weapons in the area around the time of the explosion. Bottom line, according to the New York Times, the video evidence remains murky. Well, to try and make it, to try and demurky it, let's bring in Mr. Cohen. Thank you for joining us today. How did you see this New York Times reporting on the rocket incident, the explosion at the hospital?
Yeah, I think first we would have set a premise about the landscape of media these days, Scott. You know, I don't think that any reasonable person would think that the New York Times, the Washington Post, have any greater weight than many other biased news organizations, right? I mean, they sort of exist in the same part of American media, which is mainstream media. The Times, the Washington Post, MSNBC, NBC, they all exist in that world. So you would start off reading any article that they had and say, well, I have to be careful about whether this is true or not. But more importantly, I think, was how quickly they jumped to the conclusion that it was an Israeli attack, because they wanted to, right? In other words, they were looking for any pretext that would show, even at the very early stage of the war, that Israel was wrong. They were looking for anything that would overtake the narrative that what Hamas did was pure, absolute slaughter and unconscionable by any moral standard. They all felt that they had to come up with some other mitigating force that would make the Israelis look as though they were the evil force and not Hamas. And I think that's when you read that piece, which I have done, that you see that the bias is just so overwhelmingly obvious before any evidence is actually presented.
Yeah, it's in retrospect, they're trying to say, well, we might have been right, even though the rest of the world knows what it has seen. The fact that there was a Hamas base in the parking lot of the hospital to begin with suggests that Israel would have had a right to bomb in that area because there was a Hamas base in the hospital. That's kind of ignored and swept aside in all of this. The fact that that they had set up shop in the parking lot of a hospital. Nobody is criticizing Hamas. The New York Times didn't point this out or anything else. They just simply, well, it doesn't matter. That's how they fight. And so we're going to, but it does kind of point. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think that's right. I think you've put your finger on exactly what the problem is that when you look at Hamas's tactics and who they are and their 300-mile tunnel system, they decided to put the people of Gaza, right, at risk in order to continue to have their power. What people keep forgetting is that Israel left the area of Gaza in 2005, and they said to the Palestinian Authority, hey guys, you take over now, right? We're out of this. The tanks came away, there's no Israeli government, and the people of Gaza elected Hamas leaders, the terrorist organization, and threw out the Palestinian Authority, which are the only guys in Israel that have any chance of a two-state solution. They threw them out. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that Hamas are using all of the so-called Palestinians as human shields. They are. Now, think about any other war where that's been done. In the big ones, in World War I and World War II, that didn't happen. If you look at Dresden, in 1945, in February 45, the Allies dropped 2,400 tons of ordnance on Dresden in 3 days. 10,000 Germans were killed, men, women, and children. Why? Because we were at war and we wanted to bomb Dresden so that Hitler would give up, which 2 months later he committed suicide. But that's the point of war. No one defended the Germans that were in Dresden. They weren't being used as shields, right? They were in a war. Well, I'm sorry, but the Palestinians are in a war of their own making because they decided to side with Hamas. And Hamas is using them as human shields. So I just think that any narrative that doesn't include what Hamas's message is to the world, they're as much about slaughter of their own people as they are about the 1,400 that they slaughtered in Israel.
You know, you make an excellent point about the election in Gaza in 2006. They elected Hamas to represent them. And while many say, well, they haven't had an election since then, a lot of that, there was a poll in Gaza just in the past year that and Hamas was still overwhelmingly popular. So the fact that all the aid money that's been flowing to Gaza over the years, billions in aid money since Hamas took over, Obama gave them half a billion himself. The money has been diverted to building these elaborate tunnels so that Hamas can kill Jews, not to take care of its people. They were digging up water pipes and turning them into rockets. And we can't, this attempt to equalize, say both sides are the same, it's an argument or a debate when in fact one side is a barbarous terrorist group. I know them well. Worked undercover inside Hamas 20 years ago. I know who these people are and I know what their objectives are. And their propaganda here in the United States is thorough, as we discussed the Council on American Islamic.
What is it, Scott? That makes them
CARE was a same branch root as Hamas, the Palestinian Committee of the Muslim Brotherhood. CARE was created by the Palestinian Committee, and Hamas was created by the Palestinian Committee. And CARE was intended to be the mouthpiece for the propaganda organ for Hamas. And yet here we sit in this country, and CARE representatives are so frequently quoted in the news media without any knowledge of this. Please respond.
My perspective in this discussion is really not to be an expert on the Middle East, but more to look at the way American media is treating these issues. And I think that the overwhelming lack of understanding of what you just described is the root of all of the problem. One, Hamas is not an organization that has anybody's interest in mind except the jihad. Okay, that's who they are. The leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon yesterday said that wasn't a terrorist attack in Israel where 1,400 were killed. That was the continuation of the jihad. And we here at Hezbollah, Nasrallah is saying this, we think that what our brothers and sisters in Hamas did was in keeping with the jihad. Now, most American media won't even talk about a jihad or understand what it means. It is not equal to just being someone who has faith. A jihad is not about faith. It's about the elimination of those who don't agree with what you believe in. And isn't that what you found undercover with Hamas, that they are absolutely true believers and not interested in dialogue?
That's absolutely correct. And everything that they do, the entire Palestinian Committee of the Muslim Brotherhood was dedicated to winning that battle, their jihad, and winning that battle. And every one of their assets are committed to that same objective, and that is from the river to the sea, which will, I'm sure someone on Twitter pointed out this week, will be softened by our media to actually mean something much more innocuous than it does mean. But that is precisely what we know about them, is they are committed to the objective, and they are jihadists engaged in this struggle, and they will continue, and they will continue undeterred until they are militarily stopped and rendered unable to fight. And that's what has to happen in Gaza.
That's right. But American mainstream media has just refused to realize the premise that you just presented. The general view is that there is an equality in terms of what is happening in the West Bank, and that Hamas is not unlike other organizations that can be bargained with. Now, all you have to do is look at Afghanistan and our friends in the Taliban, and you realize how what a crock that is as a operating theory to write your stories from and to do your reporting from. The Taliban never changed their point of view. It never happened. And that all of our efforts to negotiate with the Taliban didn't work. They won't work, because when you have that true believer psychology, it's so ingrained in you that it overtakes everything else. And I think that when you look at the coverage, all of the coverage is oriented towards mitigating what Hamas did, rather than embracing what Israel is trying to do, which is to create some sense of security for their people. I mean, I just saw an interview that was just done with a local Hillel executive director, where she was saying, our students can't go on campus anymore because the so-called Palestinian problem has overtaken them. And then she said, it's not a Palestinian problem. It's a hate and get rid of Jews problem. And American media just won't face up to that. Because at the end of the day, American media is less inclined to be supportive of that as well as they are anything else. So there's just a general corruption of the dialogue here. So I'm interested in somewhat more of your point of view about what's wrong with the process here. I wish it was just the New York Times, Scott, but I don't think it is. I think it's more than
that. Yeah, it is. It's absolutely down the line. CNN reported the hospital bombing, just like the New York Times, the Washington Post did, NBC. All of them reported it the same way. You actually had to get four paragraphs into their coverage to see that the information they got was from Hamas, instead of putting it up front where you could at the very least, immediately know that it's suspect information. But the other reality is that you could tell the way the media handled the war had just begun at that point. That is Israel's response. The way they handled it kind of signaled to us as journalists, that is, kind of signaled that the idea of a ceasefire was already on their minds. And if they could point to Israeli atrocities, then they could use that as a springboard to demand what they're calling a pause, really a ceasefire. And that is, again, mind-boggling to me how the media can see it this way. Because there are some things that are gray. There's some things that where multiple points of view can be seen, but in the case of the media, how on earth, you know, why on earth can't they see this more clearly?
I like when you were talking about the 106 years of the New York Times. When you look back at American media coverage of any war that we've been involved with, and I mean, you name the war. World War One opposed by American media. World War Two opposed to Pearl Harbor, past Pearl Harbor, opposed to our entry into the Second World War against the Nazis and Imperial Japan, and through the war continued to be opposed to it. And then there's Vietnam. Well, was American media ever thinking that we could sustain Vietnam, even though they were dead wrong on Tet, and that after 1968? If we had been honest about it, we would have sustained ourselves in Vietnam, that it was all lies about us losing it, Tet and Wei. Sorry, I left out Korea. I mean, you just can't look at American media as a historian like I am and not see that American media has always come together, mainstream media, to oppose any conflict that the America is involved with for righteous purpose, or anyone else in the world involved for righteous purpose. And, you know, and that includes the Ukraine as well. I mean, I just think that you begin to parlay this historically and you don't get as excited as you and I are about American media not throwing in with the Israelis. And by the way, Netanyahu was pretty clear, as far as I could tell yesterday, that there was a quid pro quo. Let all the hostages go, because one, we don't know if they're still alive. How many more of them have you tortured or allowed to starve to death? We don't know. Let's let them all out. Or maybe, why don't you let the Red Cross in and see how the hostages are? Before we even think about a ceasefire, why hasn't anybody in American media said, hey, let's have a third party go in there and check them out and see how they are? That was done in other conflicts, by the way, even the even the Hanoi Hilton, you know, so
that's
something's
the matter.
That's
a very good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. Why not let the Red Cross in to check on the hostages and provide proof that A, they're alive and that they're being treated humanely, which I have doubts about.
That's right. American media's current proposal, their current coverage is that without any verification of proof of life, that Netanyahu should issue a pause and allow humanitarian aid. Well, we all agree that humanitarian aid is important. It's like you said, that's not a gray area. No one wants the Palestinians to starve, be hurt, or everyone wants that to happen. But to have a pause without verification of life, that seems to me to be an editorial opinion by American media. It doesn't make much sense.
Well, I think your earlier point, too, right off the bat, that the fact that the Palestinians have allowed Hamas to fester and use funds intended for humanitarian purposes for the last 17 years and use it for war fighting and attacks on Israel makes them partly responsible. Now, children, of course, are an exception to that, but every living adult in Gaza almost has some kind of culpability for what Hamas has done. And so they have marginal cover, in my opinion, they have marginal cover to demand anything that, they should have been demanding that Hamas leave or, you know, taking them out of power or, you know, holding trials for Hamas. Instead, they chose to support Hamas, and now the consequences are being wreaked. We got to take a short time out. When we come back, Mr. Cohen, we'll take a turn away from this conflict and talk about the American media in general and what's wrong with it and why people don't trust it. It's trust in the media is at an all-time low. We'll take a break. You're listening to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. I'm Scott Wheeler. We'll be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
A lot is being made of the big storms that are slamming the United Kingdom right now, but they are an interesting precursor to the winter. Back in the winter of 2009-2010, major storms started pounding away in Northwest Europe, and then eventually they spread inland during the month of November. And what that was a signal of was that the upper air jet stream was beginning to cut underneath, beginning to look for its winter position. Now, last year, much of the time, it went up to the north of everybody, so it was a very warm winter across much of Europe. But this year, it looks like it's going to cut into the south, and it's going to be blocking over the top. What's blocking? Well, that's high pressure that tries to develop over Scandinavia and back toward Greenland, which turns the mean wind more northeast than normal across much of northern Europe into the UK, and leads to the colder winter. So the big rainstorms don't just mean it's raining now. They may mean something later on down the road and may not be rain. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
We all know what it's like to feel alone, but it just takes one new connection.
Want to get out of here?
To empower many.
This is unbelievable.
It doesn't take a superhero to bring forces together. We all have the power to reach out.
Let's go!
And help someone feel like they belong.
Pretty cool, huh?
We are stronger together.
Investigating and reporting on government corruption and overreach, you're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from the Washington, D.C. area. Today, we're speaking with Steve Cohen. He has 50 years in the news business. He's been the boss through most of that time. We have an excellent opportunity to quiz him about some of the things, some of the anomalies we see in the news. We were just talking about the very poor coverage of the American media of the war in Israel. And let's kind of change directions a little bit. Mr. Cohen, I like to call the most journalists, about 85% of them, of journalists in the United States, are many Republicans call them liberal. I don't think they're liberal. I think they're Democrat Party apparatchiks. If they were liberal, they would be holding the Democrat Party more accountable than they do, but they don't. They go along with the party line, even when it comes to things like human rights in China, when the Democrat Clinton administration decided to sell technology to China, the media dropped human rights issues in China immediately and went right along with them and provided cover. What is your sense of it? Why do we seem to get this perspective that is always in agreement with the Democrat Party or the far left, Mr. Cohen? Do you have a sense of it? You brought some of these journalists up yourself. You coached them when they were younger. What do you think is really behind this?
Well, I think we went from a period after World War II where there was sort of a common ground sense of what news was. There weren't many outlets, so people would show up every night to watch Walter Cronkite or Chet Huntley and David Brinkley. And the result of that was that there was a sense that this was America, right? That there was sort of one American zeitgeist, and that's how the world covered it. And you go then through the period of the Mero years, Ed Mero and Fred Friendly, where they fostered and how I was brought up, which was what we call the honest broker period, which meant that you may have a personal opinion, but nobody cares what you think, right? That's sort of the journalism that I believe in, right? I have a lot of personal opinions. Nobody cares what I think. My job is to bring everything that's out there with honesty, right, exactly the way it is, and present it to the public, and then let the public use that so that they can make good civic decisions. Now, what happened was, I think, that the honest broker ideal has faded, that the left has been able to co-opt most journalists. Now, that's not a conscious effort on their part. It's not a cabal. It's just that all of those folks, or most of those folks, that were my era are all gone. And what's left are people that have been coaxed into believing progressive politics. And that's not, and the generation that I fostered, like Lester Holt, Brian Williams, Cincy McFadden, a whole bunch of people. They are basically honest brokers, but they're fighting against a corporate world that wants to go left. And I think that's the difference. So you get to 1980, CNN happens, and 24/7 explodes. Then you get into the 90s, the late 90s, and the internet explodes. The result is that everybody's a journalist, and the folks on the left were really, really good at co-opting all the platforms. You own the platforms, the people that are on the platforms have to go along with what you believe. And then the party go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you kind of see this as the incubator for this is the college campus where journalists are trained and it's sort of inculcated. But to me, being a member of I'm a White House correspondent and I'm Senate Radio Television Gallery member and been in other press associations, it seems like many of my colleagues sense what you reference, the corporate interests, and they want to give the boss what he wants. And so if the boss is pro Biden administration, they are going to look the other way on evidence of corruption in the Biden administration. But so that it seems like kind of maybe it's the Democrat Party itself has used power to make deals with corporate media to say, you know, look, you've got you have interest before us. And Go ahead,
Scott. You know, your background is so deep in this area. So let me see if I can add something to what you already bring to your listeners, which is that they're all buddies. Jeff Zucker, right, used to hang with the leadership of the Democratic Party. Zaslav, the guy who oversees CNN now, right, a buddy with all the folks in the party. You just can't put any distance between the cocktails that they're having together and the politics that they're purveying to America. And in my era, we didn't buddy up with anybody. You know, if you were invited to something, you said, no, you know, I don't do that. I'm not interested in having dinner with you. I don't care about having dinner with you and meeting your wife and kids. It's not interesting to me. What I care about is your policy. And that's what's happened, that this buddy up social network has infected the pure journalism of others. And so when you have the White House car, and I'm sure you've been to it, the White House correspondent dinner, and everybody's sitting there all chummy up at the tables, you say, what is this all about? Why does this even exist? No, we shouldn't be doing that. Now, and then you have outliers like the late Roger Ailes, who Roger knew that there was another way, that there was a whole bunch of folks in America that just weren't buying the cocktail crowd. And those of us who are not into cocktails, but are into policy, I mean, that's why Fox was number one. Not the current Fox, but the Roger Ailes Fox, with Bill O'Reilly and those guys. I'm not going to defend the current Fox. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
You bring up you swerved into a point. Just the other night, two nights ago, I believe, the Brett Baer newscast, which is really supposed to be their premier product. They were having a report on a caravan of migrants coming up through Mexico, and they had the reporter doing the report. He says, and the leader of that caravan is highly critical of Biden. And they quote him saying that Biden is causing all this. Don't they realize that the other nations are conspiring to bring these migrants here and cause confusion? And then, boom, out of the package, out of the report that quickly, without explaining why the guy leading the caravan would be criticizing the very place he's taking the people. It made no sense. It was so completely out of context. I watched it three times over, trying to figure out what it's like Chekhov's gun. You just laid this thing out here and didn't explain it. And I'm thinking, what? Why on earth? Well, I've seen this more and more in Fox. And as Roger, who was a friendly acquaintance of mine, used to say, once he's gone, they'll eventually go down, and it seems like they are on a downward slide.
I'm just happy to be talking in the morning with someone who even knows who Chekhov is. So thanks for that.
I learned that in film school.
it's nice to have a reference that makes you feel like there's some intelligence going on. I think that I want to go after that for a second. I do think that you have to have an organic sense of knowledge that is holistic to you as a journalist in order to really do the job, so that you're not just introing something, seeing a piece, and then coming back, that there is an analytical frame of reference that is valuable. But to have that, you have to have some depth of knowledge, right? You can't be what I call Google mind. You can't be Google mind. You have to have something that is holistically part of you so that you can understand any of these circumstances and also have some sense of history. I mean, look, I've run newsrooms where I would say Tip O'Neill and people would have no idea who Tip O'Neill was. And then I would say, well, Chris Matthews used to work for Tip O'Neill. And then they're even more perplexed.
Who's Chris Matthews? Right?
Yeah. So look, So I get that. A young news person may not know who Nat King Cole or Harry Belafonte is, but they do know who Cardi B is. Well, that doesn't bother me so much because that's a cultural phenomena. But you sure as heck ought to have some clue who Franklin Roosevelt was and that Teddy Roosevelt was not his brother. I mean, you should have know that, right? But there isn't that context anymore. So without the contextual framework, it's very easy for the current opinion leaders, particularly those who are overwhelmingly of the left, to take over American journalism. And that's what's happened. When there's a lack or a vacuum of knowledge, that vacuum is filled by somebody else's litany. And the speech and modus operandi of today is way left of center. I mean, when you think that the Gang of Five with AOC and those folks are still in Congress after what they've said, it's mind-boggling.
It is, and you know, you point out the fact there's so little knowledge. I spent a lot of time studying Bob Zelnick, for example, because he was such a great reporter, and his pride in his work. He used to say, "No producer ever knew more than me about the report I was working on." And Reed Collins, mm-hmm. who was a longtime personal friend, who I helped coach me in television news. And you see these guys, they're gone, and who's filled the void? It's people who are, I guess you would say, social creatures who see Washington as the great power center and want to be in it and want to be liked by the people in power, versus guys like us who say, I want to hold the powerful accountable. And right. The media, we hear our colleagues say this, but you don't see evidence that they actually believe it. And that's the most difficult part of this. You see the decay and decline of news and journalism in general, and then you see it going all in one direction, and it seems to be heading down the drain at the same time. It's very frustrating to watch.
But I do want to sort of end on an optimistic note. There are very good people out there. There are people who put their lives at risk in war, like Richard Engel. There are people that spend the time getting the information together that do not start with a hypothesis, but start with a sense of I'm here to report in the old school way. So I'm not without optimism about the future. I do think that things turn, and that sometimes the worse it gets, the better it gets, because we have to rebuild American journalism as we move into the future.
How can that be done? We look we've got about 3 minutes left. We look at recent polls showed that America's trust in the institution of the media, news media, is about 18% right yeah. now. How can it be rebuilt? What would you do if you had the?
Well, I think all those studies are, pretty generic. I mean, I think when we're talking about, national news media, that's true. I think local news, though, is not like that. I think local news is still one of the main places that people get their news from. That's local radio news, but particularly local television news. And that's a starting point for the reclamation of American journalism, localism. I think localism is the way to do it, because at the end of the day, it's all, as Tip O'Neill said, it's all local, right?
Politics is all local. That's
and I right. think it is. It's all retail. And I think that the hard part is that the universities today do not have instructors, do not have a philosophical base. All you have to do is look at the knuckleheads at Harvard and MIT that have been sending letters to their presidents in support of Hamas, and you get really quick understanding of who's really teaching kids, and it's horrific. And they're teaching kids at $60,000 a year. So the universities of America are broken, and that's where it has to start. If we're going to save America, we have to start saving America by changing our educational point of view and getting kids out of J schools that have honest broker philosophies and not the philosophy that they have to lean left or right in order to be successful as journalists. That's how you grew up. That's how I grew up. I believe it can happen again.
Let's hope for the best. Mr. Cohen, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do
this,
it.
This hour, and we hope that you'll be able to come back and talk to us more. We can, I think the media criticism has to be brought forward more. Now, I mean, right now, all we get is, you know, one side calling them liberals and the other side calling the other side right-wing extremists. But at some point, we need to have an honest debate and look inside journalism in general and specifically get to some of these problems and address them as you have in the short time we had today.
Happy to come back and talk more, Scott. Take care.
Thank you so much. That was Steve Cohen with us, and we will be back next week with another edition of Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. That is all for today. I'm Scott Wheeler, signing off.